Page 163. Chapter 24. The Chorus Line. An Anthropology Lecture. Presented by the Maids. What is it that our number, the number of the maids, the number 12, suggests to the educated mind? There are 12 apostles, there are 12 days of Christmas, yes, but there are 12 months. And what does the word month suggest to the educated mind? Yes. You, sir, in the back? Correct. Month comes from moon, as everyone knows. Oh, it is no coincidence, no coincidence at all, that there were 12 of us, not 11 and not 13, and not the proverbial 8 maids a-milking. For we were not simply maids, we were not mere slaves and drudges. Oh, no, surely we had a higher function than that. Could it be that we were not the 12 maids, but the 12 maidens? The 12 moon maidens, companions of Artemis, virginal but deadly goddess of the moon. Page 164. Could it be that we were ritual sacrifices, devoted priestesses doing our part, first by indulging in orgiastic fertility rite behavior with the suitors, then purifying ourselves by washing ourselves in the blood of the slain male victims? Such heaps of them, what an honor to the goddess! And renewing our virginity, as Artemis renewed hers, by bathing in a spring dyed with the blood of Actaeon? We would then have willingly sacrificed ourselves, as was necessary, reenacting the dark of the moon phase, in order that the whole cycle might begin again, and the silvery new moon goddess rise once more. Why should Iphigenia be credited with selflessness and devotion more than we? This reading of the events in question ties in, excuse the play on words, with the ship's hawser from which we dangled, for the new moon is a boat. And then there's the bow that figures so prominently in the story, the curved old moon bow of Artemis, used to shoot an arrow through 12 axe heads. 12. Page 165. The arrow passed through the loops of their handles, the round moon-shaped loops, and the hanging itself. Think, dear educated minds, of the significance of the hanging. Above the earth, up in the air, connected to the moon-governed sea by an umbilical cord, linked rope. Oh, there are too many clues for you to miss it. What's that, sir? You in the back? Yes, correct. The number of lunar months is indeed 13, so there ought to have been 13 of us. Therefore, you say, smugly we might add, that our theory about ourselves is incorrect, since we were only 12. But wait, there were in fact 13. The 13th was our high priestess, the incarnation of Artemis herself. She was none other than, yes, Queen Penelope. Thus, possibly our rape and subsequent hanging represent the overthrow of a matrilineal moon cult by an incoming group of usurping patriarchal father-god-worshipping barbarians. The chief of them, notably Odysseus, would then claim kingship by marrying the high priestess of our cult, namely Penelope. Page 166. No, sir. We deny that this theory is merely unfounded feminist claptrap. We can understand your reluctance to have such things brought out into the open. Rapes and murders are not pleasant subjects, but such overthrows most certainly took place all around the Mediterranean Sea, as excavations at prehistoric sites have demonstrated over and over. Surely those axes, so significantly not used as weapons in the ensuing slaughter, so significantly, never explained in any satisfactory way by 3,000 years of commentary. Surely they must have been the double-bladed ritual labrys axes associated with the great mother cult. The axes used to lop off the head of the Year King at the end of his term of 13 lunar months. For the rebelling Year King to use her own bow to shoot an arrow through her own ritual life and death axes in order to demonstrate his power over her. What a desecration! Just as the patriarchal penis takes it upon itself to unilaterally shoot through the... But we're getting carried away here. Page 167. In the pre-patriarchal scheme of things, there may well have been a bow-shooting contest, but it would have been properly conducted. He who won it would be declared ritual king for a year, and would then be hanged. Remember the hanged man motif, which survives now only as a lowly tarot card? He would also have had his genitals torn off, as befits a male drone married to the queen bee. Both acts, the hanging and the genitals tearing off, would have ensured the fertility of the crops. But usurping strongman Odysseus refused to die at the end of his rightful term. Greedy for prolonged life and power, he found substitutes. Genitals were indeed torn off, but they were not his. They belonged to the goatherd Melanthius. Hanging did indeed take place, but it was we, the 12 moon maidens, who did the swinging in his place. We could go on. Would you like to see some vase paintings, some carved goddess cult objects? No? Page 168. Never mind. Point being that you don't have to get too worked up about us, dear educated minds. You don't have to think of us as real girls, real flesh and blood, real pain, real injustice. That might be too upsetting. Just discard the sordid part. Consider us pure symbol. We're no more real than money. Page 169. Chapter 25. Heart of Flint. I descended the staircase, considering my choices. I'd pretended not to believe Eurycleia when she told me that it was Odysseus who'd killed the suitors. Perhaps this man was an impostor, I'd said. How would I know what Odysseus looked like now, after 20 years? I was also wondering how I must seem to him. I'd been very young when he'd sailed away. Now I was a matron. How could he fail to be disappointed? I decided to make him wait. I myself had waited long enough. Also, I would need time in order to fully disguise my true feelings about the unfortunate hanging of my 12 young maids. So when I entered the hall and saw him sitting there, I didn't say a thing. Telemachus wasted no time. Almost immediately, he was scolding me for not giving a warmer welcome to his father. "Flinty-hearted," he called me scornfully. Page 170. I could see he had a rosy little picture in his mind. The two of them siding against me, grown men together, two roosters in charge of the henhouse. Of course I wanted the best for him. He was my son. I hoped he would succeed as a political leader, or a warrior, or whatever he wanted to be. But at that moment I wished there would be another Trojan War, so I could send him off to it and get him out of my hair. Boys with their first beards can be a thorough pain in the neck. The hardness of my heart was a notion I was glad to foster, however, as it would reassure Odysseus to know I hadn't been throwing myself into the arms of every man who'd turned up claiming to be him. So I looked at him blankly, and said it was too much for me to swallow, the idea that this dirty, blood-smeared vagabond was the same as my fine husband who had sailed away, so beautifully dressed, 20 years before. Odysseus grinned. He was looking forward to the big revelation scene, the part where I would say, "It was you all along. What a terrific disguise," and throw my arms around his neck. Page 171. Then he went off to take a much-needed bath. When he came back in clean clothes, smelling a good deal better than when he'd gone, I couldn't resist teasing him one last time. I ordered Eurycleia to move the bed outside the bedroom of Odysseus and to make it up for the stranger. You recall that one post of his bed was carved from a tree still rooted in the ground. Nobody knew about it except Odysseus, myself, and my maid, Actaris, from Sparta, who by that time was long dead. Assuming that someone had cut through her cherished bedpost, Odysseus lost his temper at once. Only then did I relent and grow through the business of recognizing him. I shed a satisfactory number of tears and embraced him, and claimed that he'd passed the bedpost test, and that I was now convinced. And so we climbed into the very same bed where we'd spent a great many happy hours when we were first married, before Helen took it into her head to run off with Paris, lighting the fires of war and bringing desolation to my house. Page 172. I was glad it was dark by then, as in the shadows we both appeared less wizened than we were. "We're not spring chickens any more," I said. "That which we are," said Odysseus. After a little time had passed and we were feeling pleased with each other, we took up our old habits of storytelling. Odysseus told me of all his travels and difficulties, the nobler versions, with the monsters and the goddesses, rather than the more sordid ones, with the innkeepers and whores. He recounted the many lies he'd invented, the false names he'd given himself, telling the Cyclops his name was No One was the cleverest of such tricks, though he'd spoiled it by boasting, and the fraudulent life histories he'd concocted for himself, the better to conceal his identity and his intentions. In my turn, I related the tale of the suitors, and my trick with the shroud of Laertes, and my deceitful encouragings of the suitors, and the skillful ways in which I'd misdirected them and led them on and played them off against one another. Page 173. Then he told me how much he missed me, and how he'd been filled with longing for me even when enfolded in the white arms of goddesses, and I told him how very many tears I'd shed while waiting 20 years for his return, and how tediously faithful I'd been, and how I would never have even so much as thought of betraying his gigantic bed, with its wondrous bedpost, by sleeping in it with any other man. The two of us were, by our own admission, proficient and shameless liars of long standing. It's a wonder either one of us believed a word the other said. But we did, or so we told each other. No sooner had Odysseus returned than he left again. He said that, much as he hated to tear himself away from me, he'd have to go adventuring again. He'd been told by the spirit of the seer Tiresias that he would have to purify himself by carrying an oar so far inland that the people would mistake it for a winnowing fan. Page 174. Only in that way could he rinse the blood of the suitors from himself, avoid their vengeful ghosts and their vengeful relatives, and pacify the anger of the sea god Poseidon, who is still furious with him for blinding his son the Cyclops. It was a likely story, but then all of his stories were likely. Page 175. Chapter 26. The Chorus Line. The Trial of Odysseus, as videotaped by the maids. Attorney for the defense. Your Honor, permit me to speak to the innocence of my client, Odysseus, a legendary hero of high repute, who stands before you accused of multiple murders. Was he or was he not justified in slaughtering, by means of arrows and spears? We do not dispute the slaughters themselves, or the weapons in question. Upwards of 120 well-born young men, given or take a dozen, who, I must emphasize, had been eating up his food without his permission, annoying his wife, and plotting to murder his son and usurp his throne? It has been alleged by my respected colleague that Odysseus was not so justified, since murdering these young men was a gross overreaction to the fact of their having played the gourmand a little too freely in his palace. Page 176. Also, it is alleged that Odysseus and or his heirs, or assigns, had been offered material compensation for the missing comestibles, and ought to have accepted this compensation peacefully. But this compensation was offered by the very same young man who, despite many requests, had done nothing previously to curb their remarkable appetites, or to defend Odysseus, or to protect his family. They had shown no loyalty to him in his absence, on the contrary. So how dependable was their word? Could a reasonable man expect that they would ever pay a single ox of what they had promised? And let us consider the odds. 120, give or take a dozen, to one, or, stretching a point, to four, because Odysseus did have accomplices, as my colleague has termed them. That is, he had one barely grown relative and two servants untrained in warfare. What was to prevent these young men from pretending to enter into a settlement with Odysseus, then leaping upon him one dark night, when his guard was down, and doing him to death? Page 177. It is our contention that, by seizing the only opportunity fate was likely to afford him, our generally esteemed client Odysseus was merely acting in self-defense. We therefore ask that you dismiss this case. Judge: I am inclined to agree. Attorney for the defense: Thank you, Your Honor. Judge: What's that commotion in the back? Order! Ladies, stop making a spectacle of yourselves. Adjust your clothing. Take those robes off your necks. Sit down. The maids: You've forgotten about us. What about our case? You can't let them off. He hanged us in cold blood. 12 of us, 12 young girls, for nothing. Page 178. Judge, to attorney for the defense. This is a new charge. Strictly speaking, it ought to be dealt with in a separate trial. But as the two matters appear to be intimately connected, I am prepared to hear arguments now. What do you have to say for your client? Attorney for the defense. He was acting within his rights, Your Honor. These were his slaves. Judge: Nonetheless, he must have had some reason. Even slaves ought not to be killed at whim. What had these girls done that they deserved hanging? Attorney for the defense: They'd had sex without permission. Judge: I see. With whom did they have the sex? Attorney for the defense: With my client's enemies, Your Honor, the very ones who had designs on his wife, not to mention his life. Page 179. Chuckles at his witticism. Judge: I take it these were the youngest maids. Attorney for the defense: Well, naturally. They were the best looking and the most bedable, certainly, for the most part. The maids laugh bitterly. Judge, leafing through book, The Odyssey. It's written here in this book, a book we must needs consult as it is the main authority on the subject. Although it has pronounced unethical tendencies and contains far too much sex and violence, in my opinion, it says right here, let me see, in book 22, that the maids were raped. The suitors raped them. Nobody stopped them from doing so. Also, the maids are described as having been hauled around by the suitors for their foul and or disgusting purposes. Your client knew all that. He is quoted as having said these things himself. Page 180. Therefore, the maids were overpowered, and they were also completely unprotected. Is that correct? Attorney for the defense. I wasn't there, Your Honor. All of this took place some 3,000 or 4,000 years before my time. Judge. I can see the problem. Call the witness Penelope. Penelope. I was asleep, Your Honor. I was often asleep. I can only tell you what they said afterwards. Judge. What who said? Penelope. The maids, Your Honor.